Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What will your kids learn in school about the way the world was formed? When the 15-member State Board of Education takes its vote on the science curriculum starting in January, the most debated issue by far is expected to be evolution. Since the 2005 Kitzmiller versus Dover ruling declared creationism a religious concept that cannot be taught in public schools, some opponents of evolutionary science have focused their efforts on requiring that students be schooled in the strengths and weaknesses of evolutionary theory. But many who believe that modern definitions of evolution are essentially correct argue that forcing students to focus on weaknesses gives them a skewed view of the reality accepted by science. So what do science professors think? Raymond Eve is professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Arlington. He recently published a report entitled Evolution, Creationism, and Public Schools, Surveying What Texas Scientists Think About Educating Our Kids in the 21st Century. Raymond, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here, and I thank you for your interest in the topic.
So you think that this vote by the State Board of Education could serve as a test case for the entire country for teaching evolution in schools. Can you talk about why?
Yes, it's very likely to, because publishers who create materials for science classrooms can't afford to produce 50 different sets of materials. And consequently, what happens in California and Texas and Florida tend to determine what everybody else in the United States gets, and for some very long and complicated reasons, it's probably even more important what is decided in Texas than anywhere else. So it's generally a problem or an issue, I should say, that reaches all the states, not just Texas.
What's being taught right now?
In terms of what the current tech standards are, Texas is short for the listeners for Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, which is what the State Board of Education has to review every so often to decide, in fact, what the content of all classes will be in K through 12. But the main place where controversy arises is, as you said, in the biology classroom now about evolution. And currently, essentially, there is no requirement on Texas K through 12 teachers to cover anything other than evolution. What's being proposed, that the State Board of Education has changed its composition rather substantially since the last go-round, and we now have a slight majority who are religious Christian conservatives. And they would probably like to teach so-called intelligent design theory, which came along as a fairly recent version of so-called creationism. And when I say creationism, I mean what I like to call strict creationism, the idea that you read the Bible literally, and so the world and people were created less than 10,000 years ago. And there was a sort of a sequence where 20 or 30 years ago, religious conservatives tried to require equal time for old-style strict creationism, and it kept losing in the courts on the basis of the so-called Establishment Clause of the Constitution, which says that the government may not establish any religion at the expense of any other religion, which effectively boils down to you can't have religion in public institutions. But repeatedly, the courts found that old-style creationism was religious in origin. So eventually, a group close to Dallas here, a group called the Foundation for Thought and Ethics in Richardson, Texas, published a textbook called The Pandas and People, which in many ways was a pretty good high school biology textbook. But very near the end, it kind of drew a line in the sand and said, but of course, all of this is too complicated to have happened by accident. It has to reflect the will of a designer. And, of course, the reason they didn't use the word God was they had kept losing on the basis of the Establishment Clause whenever they would refer to Scripture or Bible. So this was a new tactic. The reader, the student, could fill in the word God for designer. And they thought perhaps this wouldn't get them in trouble in the courts because there was no mention of Bible, Scripture, Jehovah, Yahweh, etc. But the courts again found that intelligent design was, in fact, religion. So in a sense, those who oppose evolution in the public schools now have been forced into a position that's even harder to detect, I guess you'd say, which is, well, let's teach the strengths and weaknesses of controversial scientific theories. And that's coded political language. That word weaknesses means let's teach the alternatives to evolution without mentioning any other theory by name, which would avoid the Establishment Clause confrontation. The problem with that being that it's really still the same set of arguments that occurred all along. But I'm kind of getting off the track. Let me go back to say that the idea was to teach weaknesses would eliminate an alternative theory in their mind. The problem with all of this is that the only area of science that anybody ever actually talks about discussing weaknesses of is evolution in the biology classroom. There's no discussion about string theory in physics or any other, whether or not the redshift actually reflects the Big Bang correctly and so on. So it's pretty much of a dead giveaway that actually it's, again, coded language. And we found that in our survey of Texas scientists. We found that well over 90% of them asked if they thought the State Board of Education should require coverage of weaknesses, said no, they thought it had no place in their classroom. But then another question which said, do you think that weaknesses of evolution in peer-reviewed journals by highly respected biologists should be discussed? 95% said yes. So I found it very interesting that apparently this confrontation had already gone far enough in their classrooms that they could recognize the coded language from social movement organizations like the Discovery Institute, which is on the edge of Seattle, and they could distinguish that from legitimate questions that you would have about any scientific theory as proposed by their colleagues in peer-reviewed journals.
So let's talk about your survey. You wanted to know what college professors teaching in Texas thought about the teaching of creationism, intelligent design, evolution in classrooms. You sent this out to about 1,000 college professors, got a little less than half of them back, is that right?
Yes, it was a little over 1,000. We tried to find every single professor in the state of Texas who was at a public university or a private university or college who taught biology and narrowed that down to those who taught what I called in the survey substantial modules of about evolution. Meaning that we tried to drop out for people who were not actively teaching large chunks about evolution so that we were attempting to let every single person in Texas who qualified have a say. Well, of course, no survey has a 100% response rate. It was a very long survey. It takes nearly 45 minutes to take it, and we got about a 45% response rate, which is really quite remarkable. The typical male survey gets about a 20% response rate, so we were very pleased with the degree to which the scientists answered. And I might just say part of this happened because, again, those who are in favor of creationism or intelligent design tend to argue that there's plenty of support among biology teachers at the college level for their position, but that they have been intimidated and, quote, expelled from the Academic Academy. And you may be aware there's a recent movie that played the National Movie Theaters, Ben Stein being the narrator, called Expelled. And the whole thesis of this movie is that there's a large number of people who really are intelligent design supporters, but they're afraid to say this out loud because they'll be expelled from their jobs or the academy. I would simply refer you to the fact that on the web you can find a website called expelledexposed.com, in which it turns out that to say the movie was disingenuous would be a vast understatement. Most of the claims made in the movie are readily debunked. So in any case, both sides were claiming that scientists believe, and nobody was asking the scientists. And I thought, well, okay, I'm a sociologist. I do a lot of survey research. I know how to do this. Let's give the scientists a voice for their own. And I'll try not to say too much about this one way or another. I'll let them, as far as we know, speak for themselves. So we did, in fact, get roughly, as I said, a 45% response rate, and people seemed eager to be able to express themselves on both sides of the issue.
And your survey, again, did include scientists who were working in religiously affiliated universities.
Yes, we had every higher education institute in Texas respond except Sewell Ross University. I don't know why that's the case, but so we did have lots of private religious-based universities or private secular universities. I was fairly surprised, though, because by and large there wasn't much difference in the responses I got from the big public universities to the small religiously-based universities. We did find about 2% of people turned out to have some sympathy for weaknesses or intelligent design type arguments. And subsequent analysis tended to indicate these were people who had never taught graduate students, was one characteristic. And a couple of other things that came up that make me believe something I can't prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, but all the circumstantial evidence is they're probably kind of marginal faculty members, meaning, for example, adjunct faculty or hired to teach rather than tenure-track research faculty. What was very clear was there was no scientist in Texas who had large research grants, who had Nobel Prizes, who taught lots of graduate students, who supported any of the weaknesses arguments.
Raymond Eve is my guest. He's professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Arlington. He's recently published a report called Evolution, Creationism in Public Schools, Surveying What Texas Scientists Think About Educating Our Kids in the 21st Century. You can find a link to the entire report on the Think page of KERA.org. I'm going to quote to you from a 2005 survey of American voters by CBS News. Most Americans do not accept the theory of evolution. Instead, 51% of Americans say God created humans in their present form. Another 3 in 10 say that while humans evolved, God guided the process. Just 15% say humans evolved and God was not involved. Is this, first of all, what does this tell you about Americans' understanding of evolution?
Well, at first pass, it would suggest they probably don't know enough basic science, even elementary school science, to really qualify their opinion on the basis of the evidence, so to speak. One reason I got interested in this whole thing in the first place was that I found Americans somewhat interested in science in the mass media, but they don't get in bar fights or kitchen arguments over whether atoms exist or continents drift. And so I was fascinated by the fact that people did have very strong emotions about creation versus evolution, which to a social scientist like myself is a dead giveaway that something's going on here besides just scientific evidence or scientific method. And I did some more research and began to realize that their belief about the age of the earth was more closely correlated with their attitudes towards things like legalizing pornography or abortion or homosexuality or stem cell research than it was with elementary questions about science like are atoms smaller than electrons or do antibiotics cure viruses and so on. So essentially what I was finding was that even among college juniors and seniors that I've sampled, you'll find that around 10 to 15% don't know whether the sun goes around the earth or vice versa. About 20% don't know whether electrons are smaller than atoms or not. All the stuff that in my generation I think we all knew by the 10th grade, so something very strange is going on. And in answer to your question, the long way around, those kind of statistics convince me that the general public is so uninformed about even basic science that their decision on this has to come from some other source. And it's pretty much uniquely an American phenomenon. There's a little bit of a tendency in Canada and England for creationism to be on the rise, but it's just very small proportion there compared to the U.S. When I think about that, a couple of things are probably going on, one of which is local control of school boards. Throughout most of the world's developed nations, curriculum for K through 12 science is controlled by some central body of experts, and the whole nation gets that. In the United States, each little school district decides what it wants. And similarly, we have the concept of a lay ministry. In most of the world, you have to go to seminary to be ordained, and so you probably have a very high level of education by the time you get out of seminary, where, of course, in the U.S., we have the tradition that you can be walking down the road to Selma and get a bright light in your eyes and be called to be a minister. So probably a few unique things in American history make us particularly susceptible to seeing this as a religious issue along the lines you described a few moments ago.
Raymond Eve is with us. He's professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Arlington. We're talking about his survey of Texas scientists about the question of teaching evolution in public schools. You can join us after the break by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Professor of Sociology at the University of Texas at Arlington, Raymond Eve. His new report is called Evolution, Creationism in Public Schools, Surveying What Texas Scientists Think About Educating Our Kids in the 21st Century. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. You allowed these professors who responded to the survey to write in comments if they chose to. One professor told you that she'd been told by her students that teachers in high school had said evolution is for atheists when they were studying in school. What did scientists, though, this is very interesting to me. Can you talk about what they told you about the possibility of both believing in God and accepting evolution as rational science?
Right, Chris. Probably the biggest concern that most biology teachers have, and parents for that matter, is this very common belief that you can't be a good Christian and believe in evolution. Let me first of all say the largest percentage of Americans, when asked what they believe about human origins, actually defy that stereotype because they are Christians who believe evolution really did happen, although they're okay with it having been millions or billions of years ago and not something less than 10,000 years ago. So right away, I would just say that by example, we see that the largest category in the United States public opinion polls are people who both are religious and believe in evolution. But it's a very convenient tactic for certain political forces on the far right to make this argument, and they've been able to put it out as sound bites in the media sufficiently well that many of my students ask me that at the beginning of a discussion about evolution, where we talk about it in sociological perspective. They'll say, well, you know, can I be a good Christian and believe in evolution? The answer is absolutely yes. I mean, yeah, there's absolutely no reason that there couldn't be some kind of a deity out there, whatever it is, the traditional Christian God or super smart space alien who put the laws of physics into motion. I mean, where did those come from? You know, the universe has an enormous amount of order and symmetry in it. I can't do that. I don't know anybody who can do it. I'm very impressed with whatever did that. And yet it happened millions and billions of years ago. And so in one sense, ironically, it's one reason intelligent design has been a very successful term for creationists. It's a huge tent. You can include the thing I just said, that even a person such as myself could be very comfortable with the idea I can't prove there wasn't some kind of intelligence billions of years ago who created the laws of nature. You know? But that's very different than arguing that sort of a personality 10,000 years ago created Adam and Eve in the garden all at once and that they're in no way connected to any other higher primates. So anyway, the punchline is that there is simply a misbelief, and probably the biggest favor those listeners who are in favor of evolution could do to the whole cause is to disequate the idea that you can't be a good Christian and believe in evolution.
Let's, for full disclosure, let's talk about the funding of your study, because you were funded by a group which defines itself as an organization that wants to defend science from the religious right. Are you? Is the group trying to sort of deliberately keep children who may be raised in right-leaning religious homes from practicing their own family's faith?
I don't think so, certainly. I would be very uncomfortable with that if they were. I've seen no evidence of that. The group in question is called the Texas Freedom Network, and they're based out of Austin, Texas. They've been around for a few years now. And they were, as you said, created as a political counterbalance, I guess you'd say, to the extreme Christian and political right. I keep saying political right, by the way, because the most potent advocates for intelligent design and teach the weaknesses, again, are social movement organizations like the Discovery Institute outside of Seattle, which is handsomely funded by far-right businessmen, not religious leaders and not scientists, far-right, extremely wealthy businessmen. And so there is some interesting equating here about far-right religion and far-right politics. But in any case, the Texas Freedom Network felt there were many Christians and other moderate religious figures not having a voice that was being heard in the public media, and set out to do that. I would hasten to say that one of the problems I confront, I've studied the creationist movement for about 20 years, and probably anybody who reads my stuff can tell that I believe in evolution. And it probably comes across sometimes that I may be advocating for science education pointing to evolution as the inevitably correct answer. But when somebody comes to me as the head of the sociology program at UTA and as the acting director of the Center for Social Research and asks me to do a piece of research, the first words out of my mouth are, I'm going to have to be as objective as I possibly know how. Otherwise, I'm going to discredit my profession and my institution. And let me also say why UTA, their Center for Human Ethics vetted the survey as ethical and good science. It was not UTA who sponsored this. It is, in fact, the Texas Freedom Network with whom we contracted. And anyway, the point being that I like to think that we did everything we could to make it a fair survey. We actually went out and talked to a number of people we knew ahead of time to be creationist intelligent design people as we designed the questionnaire and said, is this offensive to you in any way? Do you feel like there are places here where you are not able to express your own opinion and so on? And got no, how can I say, we incorporated everything we could to try to make it neutral. When we actually did distribute it, I did get some irate emails. But interestingly enough, most of them were people who had gone to the web and looked up the Texas Freedom Network and noticed it was religious and immediately decided it was right-wing conservative religious. And they
before they read the survey.
Or even anything about TFN. And so I got a lot more questions about, well, why should I answer this when it's being sponsored by a bunch of crazy right-wingers? And, I would have to go through this thing about, no, you didn't read who TFN really is. They're the other guys. But in any case, as I said, I actually have to be careful on a talk show like this one because I have two hats. I have the hat that's the guy who's been analyzing the movement for 20 years, but then I have the other hat of unbiased social researcher. And so if I ask about the survey, I try to keep my own personal opinions to a minimum and talk about what scientists believe because the whole point was to let the scientists speak for themselves.
And just briefly, I definitely want to get to the phones here, but let's summarize because you had well over 90% for all of the numbers supporting the teaching of evolution sort of without teaching limitations to a great extent. But can you talk about what these scientists seem to think the problem was with children being instructed according to the weaknesses of intelligent design, or rather of evolution? In other words, what do they think the problem is if kids don't learn evolution as science in K-12?
Well, I think many of them feel that we're jeopardizing the future of those children. Most of us are unpleasantly aware at this moment of the enormous economic downturn we're facing in the United States. There's much hue and cry about how much of that's a result of outsourcing American jobs, and that's accurate. I mean, most of the heavy industry kind of smokestack industry jobs are now gone overseas somewhere. Leaving two kinds of jobs in America, menial service jobs, slinging hamburgers at McDonald's or cutting hair, and the other one is really high-tech stuff that no other nation can do. And recently, somebody said, I think quite accurately, that what the space program was to the 20th century, biology will be to the 21st century because of recombinant DNA and stem cell research and so on. And probably the best and brightest hope we have. I'm clear in my own mind that certainly the Obama administration has said this, is that green technologies and biotechnologies are the future of the U.S. So if you have kids who believe the world is less than 10,000 years old, created in less than 6 days, who have no interest at all in evolution, which, how can I say this, evolution goes way beyond the question of biological evolution. The principles at work in biological evolution are involved in lots of other evolutionary systems as well. And to avoid evolution or to tell people you're not a good Christian if you study evolution, at one point I think I said in something I wrote that if a foreign country had convinced our citizens and our children of this, we'd probably declare war on them because they had so thoroughly ruined our future. So I think that's the main concern I'm hearing from the biology professors themselves.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Becky in Rowlett. Hi, Becky.
Hi, I'm a public school teacher in Texas, and of course, being so, I'm subjected to hearing about tax testing all the time. And science is not my subject matter, so I'm not that familiar with the exit level science tax test that's being given to our high school students. My question is, I'm wondering if he has done some research about how perhaps the content of that test reflects some of these trends that he's seeing, and or if the testing situation itself has kept instruction from being from focusing on what we used to be instructed on back in, you know, 25 years ago, if that has gone away because of some of this excessive testing that we're doing. I'm just wondering if he's had any comments or have been able to look at the content of the test to see if that correlates to any of the findings that he had in his report. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Well, it's a really excellent question. And the quick answer is no, not with respect to this particular study. In general, I think you're right. I mean, I have looked at the other general question you raised, and that is that exit testing all over the country, not just in Texas, has caused many, many teachers to complain that they have zero freedom to actually talk about important questions in class or controversial ones. They're too busy trying to make sure the kids know the answer to the exit test. And I think there probably is some evidence that that kind of exit testing is counterproductive because it focuses on kids learning everything by rote memory, one little fact at a time, rather than understanding investigative process or critical thinking. The other twist here could be, and I had not thought about this till talking to Kathy Miller the other day, who is the director of Texas Freedom Network that we've been talking about, and Kathy said, well, maybe it is the political forces that are causing teachers to do something we do know is true. We do know from some of my previous research that a lot of K through 12 biology teachers say they just skip the section on evolution, and because they're afraid of irate parents and hostile community groups. A few of them, well, I shouldn't say a few. Some of my earlier research indicated that as much as about 20-25% of high school biology and life science teachers actually favor creationism or intelligent design themselves. And are perfectly willing. In the words of one of them, what I teach when I close my door is my business, and I don't care what the state says. But there's an issue there that some of your listeners might be interested in, too, because if you think about who teaches biology in high schools, there are teachers in high schools now that are the best equipped there have ever been, but there are also still plenty of instances where the football coach, for example, is expected to cover the biology class. And I did a survey about 20 years ago that showed roughly 25% of the nation's biology and life science high school teachers were in favor of creationism. And it was a big hue and cry, made the front page of nearly every newspaper in America. And so the Biology Teachers Association, and I think, really tightened up the gatekeeping for a while. And indeed, it seemed to change for a while. And my suspicions are that, but I would have to go back and investigate this. It seems like maybe that gatekeeping function has sort of gone away in the last 10 years or so for various reasons.
Raymond Eve is here. He's professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Arlington. His newly published report is called Evolution, Creationism, and Public Schools. Let's go next to the phones. This time we'll speak to January in Chicago. Hi, January.
Hello, my name is Eric January. Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for having a lively debate about this subject. I'm a CPA, and I've written some books on money and economics, and the reason I'm calling because I think one of the things that we need to distinguish is I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I'm going to say that up front, and I don't know whether Mr. Raymond is or not, but I believe that religion is a belief, and I believe that just as evolutionists, Muslims, atheists, Christians, and et cetera, we all have a belief. We shouldn't simply have everything that we should believe, we shouldn't have faith in. And I believe that if something like evolution is not open to debate, it's doing a disservice to the students because education is not about indoctrination. And children should be encouraged to think. I mean, this is what this show is about. And we shouldn't be telling them this is what is right, this is what is wrong. I have three children, and I'm amazed every single day at how much they're able to assimilate what I tell them about religion and basically spit it back to me and tell me whether or not this is right or wrong and what the actual meaning of Scripture is.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's get another comment, this time from Chuck in Fort Worth. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, great show, Chris. Thanks for being on, Professor. I was wondering how much of this debate in the realm of science is caused by the fact that there's not so much emphasis placed on the teaching of traditional Western philosophy in terms of the Greeks, and also if, because it's entered the science realm, if the extreme right and extreme left are missing the middle ground where teachers could point to philosophy or could point to some of the more recent developments in terms of what happened before the Big Bang or what happened right before a one-celled organism was created. You know, if they could point back to a philosophy rather than having it have to be in the realm of science.
Interesting idea. Thanks so much for your call. What do you think?
Well, I think that a lot of us would actually favor that if it taught in, say, a social science class or history class. Certainly what you say is very true. And I would add that a number of our respondents who said they would like to teach the weaknesses made open-ended comments where it was clear that the reason they wanted to teach the weaknesses was to debunk them. And let me again say, in case people came in late on the radio, there's two kinds of weaknesses. One are political buzzwords used by the far right to actually get creationism back into the classroom without calling it creationism. But nearly all our scientists were interested in the scientific process is one in which there are no final answers. Everything's open to question. There should be constant questioning of the status quo. And they didn't have any problem with that. They generally felt that they did want to go there. What I think is a problem, though, here is a curriculum problem in terms of both high schools and colleges, because I'm a big advocate of teaching a little bit about the history and philosophy of science and where it came from. And the difficulty is the physical scientists aren't prepared to do that. They're not trained in it, and they have enough trouble just teaching biology. And the flip side is true, too. Generally speaking, the liberal arts and social scientist people are not very strong in their scientific backgrounds, and so how you create a course where you can teach really the history and philosophy of science and what legitimate dissent looks like among scientists versus political rhetoric kind of dissent is an open question that we all need to solve.
Tougher still in a room full of seventh graders, I can imagine.
No, I think it might be more the college level, really.
Raymond Eve is my guest. His newly published report is called Evolution, Creationism in Public Schools. You can find a copy of the whole report on the Think page of KERA.org. If you want to join us, you can send email to think@KERA.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Raymond Eve. He is from the University of Texas at Arlington. He has recently published a report called Evolution, Creationism in Public Schools, Surveying What Texas Scientists Think About Educating Our Kids in the 21st Century. We have an email from Patrick in Tyler who says, a person has to go a long way in their thinking if they believe that the presentation of any question, say a question about the teaching of evolution, is not affected by the way it is asked. Everyone in the media knows this. Isn't it disingenuous to expose the so-called creationists as being deceptive in the way their question is framed in order to get in trouble with the courts for contending that there are weaknesses in evolutionary theory? You sound afraid to address the issue head on, but stoop to painting a picture of deception. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, I can try. I'm not sure that I agree, for one thing. I have discovered that there's a lot of truth to the maxim about shooting the messenger if you don't like the message. And for that matter, if the readers want to see a really elaborate discussion of the methodology of this survey, you can go to the Texas Freedom Network website, and there are some responses there that defend the survey. There's some really entertaining vitriolic personal attacks on yours truly. But in any case, there's a really detailed discussion there of the methodology. I don't know that I agree that the question was worded that way. In fact, one of the entries on the blog site I just described goes into some detail about how the language does seem to, in fact, be neutral. And I did say at the beginning of the program, we actually went and talked with a number of creationists and ID supporters, and I think we were genuine in our hearts. And when we said, you know, if you think there's offensive language here or it doesn't represent your point of view or these open-ended questions don't capture the way you feel, tell us and we'll change it. And we did make some changes to try to accommodate that. All questionnaires are subject to some variation in the percentages you get, depending on how you ask the question. But I believe if people read the questionnaire for themselves and the questions, and again, that's available from World Wide Web, TFN.org, I think you'll see they're worded in ways that are non-controversial and neutral.
Let's go to Barbara in Grapevine. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Well, I find this very interesting. I don't have a kid in school now, but I do hear these discussions. And I was predominantly educated in Catholic and Episcopal schools, and currently am an Episcopalian. And I was taught throughout those, the theory of evolution. We never even, creationism came in our religious education and philosophy classes, but not in our science classes. And I agree. I think it does a child a great disservice to try to teach some kind of a weird blend of this in school, because then they get into college and they're totally confused and they're too young to make the discernment. And I fully back you, sir. I think you've got a good thing going here.
Barbara, do you happen to remember how it was handled in your school when you know, an 8-year-old put up his or her hand and said, but I thought Adam and Eve were the first two people?
Well, we were told that the Bible, you know, reflected things as accurately as it could, but you know, sometimes God's day was longer than our day in an explanation for the 7 days of creationism.
Well, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let us go next to Steve in Dallas. Hi, Steve.
Oh, hi. Speaking of language, I've found it curious. I've noticed over the years that particularly, I don't really know how high school science teachers do it, but particularly watching fine science specials on PBS, for instance, the scientists there clearly and unabashedly, without a hint of irony, I guess, ascribe characteristics to nature of creativity, purpose, will, a sense of humor. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard the phrase nature created from these guys. And I just wonder, I mean, they all sound like intelligent designers to me as some kind of subconscious assumption or something going on. I never hear it talked about in terms of evolution, talked about in terms of pure mechanics and, you know, the impersonal plus space plus time, and this happened, you know, this way. I just wonder if your author had any comment on that. And it's just an observation, but it's almost like the uproar, and it's almost like intelligent design comes across no matter who's talking about it.
Thanks for your call, Steve.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I don't, you know, one of my weaknesses is I haven't spent a lot of time in the classroom listening to teachers, and so I'm not sure how qualified I am to speak to that, other than people talking about evolution generally anthropomorphize it, meaning try to give it human qualities, and I think it may be because it's pretty hard to get your head around. And students often find it really boring, so the extent to which you can make it sound like a personality at work, I expect it's tempting to anthropomorphize it. But I think that would be all I would know to say in response to your comment.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Tom in Arlington. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, I do like the fact that you're studying this as a sociologist, but I was wondering if in your discussions, if it ever came up, the people that are in favor of intelligent design are mostly, you say, are from the Christian religious right, what they're going to do about the other creation mythologies that they're going to have to teach in the schools, like Hinduist and Buddhist creation stories, which really don't conflict with evolution. In fact, a lot of the Hindu scientists, and Oppenheimer was a Hindu, even though he was raised as a Jew. Einstein believed in the God of Spinoza, the sum total of national laws, and there are other creation stories that encompass billions of years or longer and that don't conflict with cosmology or evolution of species or even galaxies. And I'm wondering if the people who propose intelligent design, if they're going to allow those viewpoints to be taught. A lot of our educational systems are now, you know, 40-50% Asian. We're going to have to teach a lot of different creation stories than just the one in Genesis. And I'm wondering if that ever came up in any of these people you talked about. I think a lot of people would not oppose intelligent design if they didn't think that it had been co-opted by a really narrow group of pretty fringe Christians that don't even represent the majority of Christians, much less the majority of people who believe in a creator of some sort or a creative principle.
Well, Tom, you raised some really interesting points there, and I do thank you for your call. I will say, and I'll sort of let Raymond take over from here, no one in Texas is saying that we should add the creation story into biology classrooms. That is not the argument, and it hasn't been for some time.
Right. And again, you can teach all the things you just mentioned anytime you want in social studies or history class. The debate is whether or not to introduce various origin stories into the science classroom in addition to the mainstream consensus on evolution. But the caller did make one point I want to communicate to your listeners. We're mostly talking about people who are biblical literalists, and that's even a subcategory of fundamentalists. And about 20 years ago, I was called to a small town south of here about a panic about Satanism, where all the high school kids were going to be sacrificed on Halloween night when on their way home by Satanists. And I went to interview the woman who organized a meeting for parents that thousands of parents had showed up for. And I asked her a series of questions about what do you think of the following are problems. And I said, homosexuality in America, yes. Pornography, yes. Abortion, yes. Legalizing drugs, yes. And then I said, the teaching of evolution in the public schools. And she paused a moment and thought about it a while and said, well, that's the cause of all the others, isn't it? And frankly, I had absolutely no idea what she was talking about at the time. So I spent the next several months talking to conservative Christian pastors and friends and so on, and eventually realized what she was saying was that if you're a biblical literalist and the Bible's the literal word of God, then if it's wrong about the age of the earth, guess what else may be true? It might be wrong about everything. And in the mind of folks like this woman I was interviewing, what happens is that if it's wrong about the age of the earth, that leads to their favorite whipping boy secular humanism. And people will decide what's right and wrong. And their public opinion polls show that religious and political conservatives are very dubious about human nature. So, of course, they assume they'll make all the wrong decisions about moral values. And that will lead to prostitution, pornography, homosexuality. So the light finally went on in my head, because I'd known for some time that people's attitudes in the general public about creation and evolution correlated far better with how they felt about gay marriage or homosexuality or pornography or abortion than they did with what they knew about science. And so I finally realized, well, most of them generally didn't know anything about radiometric dating or human migration patterns out of Africa, the human fossil record and so on. And so their very, very strong opinion was mostly about protecting a threatened worldview or lifestyle from a modernist one, because they tend to believe a thing is true by reason of tradition, faith, or authority. God said it, I believe it, that's the end of the argument. And I like to call that cultural traditionalism. But then starting with the Enlightenment in the 1700s, there was cultural modernism. Things are true because you deduce a hypothesis and go get empirical data and test it and either accept it or reject it. And that's how you decide what truth is. So they're really using completely different rules for how you know a thing to be a true thing. And they're profoundly irresolvable ways. But anyway, to sum up, the point is it's mostly for biblical literalists who read the Bible as the literal word of God that if it's wrong about the age of the earth, it leads to this sequence of events that lead to all these terrible social problems. And frankly, I kind of admire creationists who respond to that with huge amounts of energy and money to protect their children in their mind. They spend more time and money trying to protect their children from this perceived evil than the guys on the other side of the issue do. But I do have to say, while I admire their motives, I find that their logic is thoroughly faulty, I guess you'd say, about the string of causation.
Well, what's the effect in our society of this friction between cultural traditionalists and cultural modernists?
Well, it does make blue states and red states, for one thing. you can almost map out creation-evolution debate and layer it over the election results, and it's remarkable how precisely they line up. I would add, by the way, it's a worldwide problem, because in one way you can think about some of our foreign policy problems in the same way. I mean, the United States as a total nation represents kind of cultural modernism, science, technology, secularism, Hollywood, in conflict with cultural traditionalism in places like many places in the Mideast, for example, and so on. And You know, when we go to offer them democracy, they probably don't mind getting democracy. But in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, if India imports the unhappiness of the West, it will not be progress.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We can take one final call from Curtis in Arlington. Hi, Curtis.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that even Newtonian physics, which is foundational to everything that we understand about the physical world, has some holes in it. And those exceptions and corner cases have essentially defined the frontiers of modern theoretical physics. So if the same is true about evolutionary theory, then completely ignoring those weaknesses in order to strong-arm the argument against creationism could be doing a huge disservice to science in general. So with that having been said, what are these weaknesses that we're debating about whether we should teach?
Well, that's actually a good question because, generally speaking, a lot of the weaknesses we're supposed to teach have already been debunked, like missing fossil transitional forms, and most of the so-called missing fossil transitional forms aren't missing. I would say you're spot on. I mean, science advances when occasionally there's one individual who... like Copernicus, who realizes that everything doesn't go around the Earth, that things go around the sun, and at one point in time, he's a minority of one, even though he's right. And every scientist, I think, understands that. As we said earlier in the program, that I was really impressed with how our science faculty around Texas knew the buzzwords out of the creation movement and the Discovery Institute and didn't want to teach those, but they did simultaneously say to the extent of 97%, I think it was, of course, they'd like to teach the genuine controversies about evolution that their peers who publish research and so on have raised. And so I think there really are two different categories of weakness. One is political buzzwords, and the others are things that scientists themselves recognize as problems with evolution that the theory would be enhanced by finding more comprehensive and deeper answers to.
What do you think the State Board will do?
I think they would have, as of a couple of months ago, almost certainly required the treatment of weaknesses. And by the way, they slipped in some new language just the other day, which is that some of the groups now advocate teach the limitations of methodologies.
As opposed to the word weaknesses.
Yeah, that sort of changed the word a little bit. It's exactly the same issue. I think they probably would have passed the requirement to cover limitations and weaknesses. The depth of the public backlash, though, to the SBOE meetings and to this survey in which the scientists of Texas have spoken, and 97% of the faculty who teach evolution in Texas have made it very clear that they think the political buzzword versions of weaknesses ought to go. I think maybe the State Board is going to find it very hard not to acknowledge that.
Raymond Eve's report is called Evolution, Creationism, and Public Schools. There is a link to the full report on the Think page of KERA.org. Raymond, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here, and I appreciate your interest in the topic.
Have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.